Well, welcome everybody, and we're going to throw you a quick curveball. I am introducing today. So today with us, we have Joey Stabile Shui. I don't know her as that last name. I only know her as Joey Stabile because that's the girl that grew up two doors down. So obviously, she's only a couple years old. She's like maybe 25, 26, but we both grew up in Leonard, Texas and made different ways. And now here she is with us today on the Hard Work Beats Talent podcast. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you very much.
We do a rapid fire questions to start. Ryan will ask the first one. They're pretty laid back, pretty funny. And then we go from
there. Love it.
What is one hidden talent that you have?
A hidden talent. Man, that's a good question. I don't hide much. That's a hard one for me. It'll tell you a little bit about me. If it's a talent, I'm sharing it with I'm very boisterous and some have said egregiously self-confident. So I don't know that I have a hidden talent. I think it might surprise people. I have been complimented on my singing voice. I never sing like for any other reason other than in church, but I get complimented on that. And so people probably wouldn't know that because I'm not singing everywhere.
Didn't know that.
I would love to be able to sing. Going back to the one sidebar real quick, rabbit hole, you know you're growing up and you're doing musical instruments and your mom says, you're going to stay in this for 5 years at least. You know, you got to be able to do it. And then you're going to regret, quitting later on in life. And of course, I regret quitting a musical instrument later on in life, but I'm never going to tell her that. And I'm pretty sure she doesn't listen to our podcast, so I'm safe there too.
There we go.
Next question is, where's one place you've been you never want to go back?
Ooh, never want to go back.
It could be because of
food. I was like in the back. I had a client one time in like the backwoods of Pennsylvania. And it was scary and weird. And no, I wouldn't want to go back there. Like it was something out of a movie. I was glad Billy was with me and my husband was with me at the time, but it was weird. I couldn't even tell you who they were affiliated with, but it was a church and it was weird. It was just weird.
Like culture.
And I got, no, it absolutely wasn't, but it was just a weird, it was all weird. That's all I'm going to say. Go down that road.
Yeah.
I really don't remember the name or the denomination, but it was just off. Yeah.
What is your guilty pleasure?
As she writes.
Gummies.
Gummies?
Gummies. Weed gummies?
So yeah, I like peach rings. That's my, I'm traveling, I throw a bag of peach rings in my briefcase and they're always with me if I'm going somewhere. There's a grocery store chain here that carries them in bulk and they can get this really big bag. And so especially if I'm going on a golf trip somewhere, I always have peach rings in my golf bag.
Homemade Rice Krispie Treats is
a grilling.
But they got to be homemade in the store bought. Not down with that. Yeah.
Who is one person that had a surprising impact on your life?
And it can't be Wes.
It wasn't Wes. Don't get you. I've had no impact other than bad impact.
You had impact. It's a friend of mine she lives in Austin. I mention her in my book and I had the opportunity to be around her a lot. She's an artist. I have a lot of respect for her. And she looked at me back to our intro, me saying that I don't play girl well. She looked at me when I was in my late 30s and she was like, you need to find some girlfriends. And that was very important and timely and well said. And I have some really close girlfriends now as I'm aging. And that was really good. She had a great impact on me. So
what is the hardest thing you have had to overcome?
Ooh, it's a long story. I'll try to shorten it as much as I can. I was an English major in college and people said, oh, you're going to teach. And I was like, God, no, it's the last thing I wanted to do. As Wes knows, I came from a long line of teachers and preachers and coaches, and I was going to conquer the corporate world. And I set out to do just that, landed a really cool job out of college with an investment firm in Dallas. I worked with them for 3 years and I was bored out of my mind. And I played tennis in college and I was approached by a friend of the family who asked me to just essentially build the tennis program at an inner city Catholic school in Dallas at Bishop Dunn. And I did, left the investment firm in 2003, literally cut my salary in half and probably doubled my workload and had never been happier. Then was essentially pulled away and recruited to build a Catholic high school in Plano. So John Paul II High School. I was there for 15 years. I was director of admissions, then vice president for admissions and alumni, then chief advancement officer. Also in those early years, I built their tennis program, started with the men's and women's program, loved it all, built it for my kids. I said I built it for Will Shuey, who is now a sophomore in college. And 12 years into my 15, a leadership change and above me. And I had some issues with a lack of ethics surrounding financial aid. This new individual thought that a winning men's basketball team and football team is all we needed, and wanted to put more money where it shouldn't go. And I up to him on it, and I got fired. And it was a wrongful termination. It rocked my world. And then when I didn't take severance, my child was expelled. So my son finished his freshman year, played 3 sports, was an ambassador. Yeah. So really, really shitty thing that happened. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. So it was a lot to overcome, but it kind of led me to what I'm doing now, which is I know I was making a difference all those years. I absolutely believe I'm making a difference now on a larger scale. So, and my kid ended up at the school he was supposed to be at.
Which is also your alma mater, right?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, for high school, he went to Trinity Christian Academy, which was a great experience for him. And he is now at Hendricks College, which is where I met my husband. So my husband played baseball. I, at Hendricks, was recruited to play tennis, but Wes won't be surprised. I walked onto the soccer team my sophomore year, basketball team my junior year, cheered 2 years, loved it all. And that's how Wes knew me in high school too. And Will's there now playing, looked at it initially to play football, fell in love with the basketball program, and he's actually playing lacrosse, of all things.
And that's what your younger son plays, right, too?
Oh, yeah. The younger son, yeah. The older one just walked on, and as an offensive lineman, they put a D-pole in his hands, and he's all in on defense. My younger son plays attack for select teams, and he's going to do it in college. I'm hoping I can get him there. I don't know. You know, he'll go wherever the younger one's going to go wherever the party is, probably. So
good. Hey, you know what? Yeah. We all have those in our family.
That's right.
My younger brother was that way.
As I know, yeah. All too well.
Yeah, he never met a girl he wasn't scared to talk to.
That's right. That's right.
So my last question is, if you could have one meal with any person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Man, I'm wondering if I should go with what popped into my head first.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Michelle Obama. I just am. I think she's legit, and I think we'd have a good conversation.
What do you think you guys would talk about?
The state of the world, helping people, all kinds of things. She strikes me as someone who's all about implementing change and doing it the right way. And yeah.
I figured you'd go sports. Like, that was my first gut. Was like, I thought
you were... No, Michael Jordan, he's an 8. If you want to talk about Enneagram, he's an 8 like me. So that'd be a fun conversation.
I have no clue what I am. I couldn't tell you.
I could.
You could?
No clue what you're talking about, though.
Well, we're going to get into that. So it's actually probably a pretty good segue.
I'm excited to get.
Yeah. So tell us about what you do, why you do, and
all the things. Okay. So Enneagram, I'm going to spell it for the listeners, Enneagram. It is a personality typing system that can be traced pretty far back. People say 2,000, 4,000 years old. I don't get caught up in all that. I know that it came to the United States and was kind of popularized in the 1970s. The reason I was exposed to it is it's the work that my mom has done for a second half of life career. So today is an important day, October 13th. It's my mom's 75th birthday. And she has an illustrious career. She was the first head women's basketball coach at SMU after Title IX. She started shared housing in Dallas, which is a huge initiative that it still stands today, that essentially pairs families, poor families, with older people who need help and provide a place to live. That's really cool. And then this second half of life, she picked up the Enneagram. She learned it 30 years ago. And anyone who does know what Enneagram is knows Suzanne Stabile. She's considered the godmother of the Enneagram. She's written 3 books, the first of which is The Road Back to You, and that has sold over 1 million copies. So it's published in 18 different languages. If, you know, 1 million sounds like a lot, well, just to give you the stats, 0.035% of books ever published will sell that many. So I think she put it on the map because her way of teaching it is very personal. It's very relatable. She's a good storyteller. And she uses feeling. So if you look at the breakdown of Enneagram at its core, it's just we draw all of us from our 3 native intelligence centers, thinking, feeling, and doing. But we don't draw from them in the same order, and we don't draw from them with the same frequency. So I know about myself as an 8 that doing is first for me, thinking is second. So logic and objective reason and feeling is last. So relatability, the ability to get along with others, the ability to recognize how you're coming across. This will all peak for Wes because Wes knew me in high school. And if you knew me, you liked me. And if you didn't, then you absolutely thought I was a bitch. So this was something that in my life, helped a lot, but I'm not a feeler like my mom. Feelings last. For me, I came along and just kind of picked up stuff while she was really gaining traction and getting big internationally. And we realized really quickly that I could teach this from a more corporate professional angle. I get the logic behind it. What's really cool, though, is because I've known it for as long as I have, I'm absolutely advancing what's been said historically. And so this book that I have coming out in March is specifically my consulting work, which is Enneagram in the corporate space. That being said, people always ask, you know, therapists are going to get a lot out of it. You know, what are they want to know the publisher, what's the primary audience, what's the secondary audience, what's the tertiary audience? My tertiary audience that I'm just chomping at the bit just for one door to open, I think this would kill in college and pro sports. I think knowing where you're coming from, knowing how you're wired, you could, you know, it would help team dynamics regardless of where you are. So essentially, the bottom line is Enneagram is the only system that types you on motivation. So every other system out there, and there are probably hundreds at this point, some you two may be familiar with, Myers-Briggs, Clifton Strengths, DISC assessment, even Lencioni's Working Genius, those are all great and have their place. But human autonomy invariably shakes those up because we behave based on all kinds of factors, but our motivation is pretty static and doesn't change. And so it's drawn from the intersection of the three native intelligence centers, and it helps a lot in corporate, which is what I do full time now.
So when you got out of the education space and you started doing this, how did you get your foot in the door?
Largely word of mouth. Like I would have, and for sure the early ones, they were people who reached out to my mom. And my mom was like, this is great, and I will not be good in your space. And she had the wisdom to know that as a two, her tendency to tell a lot of stories and want to relate a lot works really well in like certain environments and not so much in corporate environments. So first couple, like that's ultimately where I got Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A corporate's one of my main clients. I've been working with them for 5 years, and I'm five or six teams now that I've worked with. So it's just a kind of a foot in the door, and then other people say, you know, it's word of mouth after that. Reliant Energy, this is a cool story. I'll tell you, Reliant Energy, my client, when I was at JP2, one of my good friends, he's still the athletic director there, and he just took over again the football program, George Teague. And George Teague played for the Cowboys. He's the defender of the star. He's the one who pushed
Terrell Owens.
Uh-huh. Terrell Owens off the star. Yeah. So, and he Alabama national championship. So he and I worked really well together and good friends. And he was doing something for the Cowboys with Reliant Energy. And an executive VP on the bus brought up Enneagram. And George said the hair on the back of his neck stood up. He was like, I know the person you need to talk to. So it's just those kind of connections that allow me to get into doors. And 70% of my client base is long-term. So like they, beyond an initial typing, know your number, they're still using it for hiring, for their teams, all the stuff.
So tell us about the book. You said you wrote a book. You mentioned it's coming out in March. I've already pre-ordered it. So I'm on the list. I'm trying to help you get to a million.
Thank you. Thank you.
Possible. One small purchase at a time.
There you go.
Thank you, Amazon. So what was the impetus in writing it? What was the inspiration for writing it? And then how long did it take you?
Okay. The impetus was that I knew that I was saying things that haven't been said. I think that when you advance something that's already got such a strong foundation, but I'm finding important pieces that really fit and also really work well in the corporate world, it was like, I got to get this on a larger scale. And I floated it. You don't write the book when you sell it. You write just some part of it. And I wrote it. And with connections of my mom, I floated it to a newer publishing company that you don't have to have an agent for. I was like, yeah, let's try with them. They held it for about a month. And I was like, okay, this is it. And then they said no. And for me, I'm like, okay, I'll just do it myself. I literally was like, I will just self-publish. It took one rejection. But then the publisher of my mom's three books, I connected with them and I said, I know this, they're a Christian publisher. And this is not, Enneagram is historically taught with a spiritual slant. I don't use a spiritual slant at all. It's strictly motivation for me in corporate space. I said, this doesn't have a Christian slant. They're kind of broadening their reach, and they gave me a book deal. So I got that in January of 2024, so last January, and turned in the final manuscript in December. I think it's different for everybody. I'm not trying to say writing a book is easy. I think it actually took me, because this is what I do all day, every day, took me about 3 months to get the book written.
You have pictures in it? Because Wes likes pictures.
I do. Coloring.
It's certainly not a graphic novel, but it definitely has figures, if you will, that are going to help.
The coloring page is even better. Like, if I can pull out my coloring pencils and have some fun.
There we go.
But Lunar Education is shining through. I know Miss Marshall will be very proud.
Yeah. I was able to put that English major to work finally, though. Definitely.
Hey, that's I married an English major.
Yeah.
So you're up that A&M degree up there somewhere.
I see.
So when you're writing a book, going through that, for how long, how many hours a day do you work on a book? When that conversation takes place with the publisher, what's that like? They say, okay, we'll give you a book deal. Is it two books or do they go one book at a time as you evolve in writing more and more books? How does that conversation work?
Well, this publisher went one book at a time. What's interesting is they wanted when I got my advance, a fourth of the advance was a study guide. They wanted like a reading guide to go with it. They had found that to be successful with other books. And we went back and forth on how we were going to do that. Because again, this is in a corporate space. Their vision was, we're going to have group studies would be a thing. And I was like, there are nine types only. And I said, of the nine, only three are even going to want to talk about this at work. So this is not, I had a different vision that I stuck to. I was like, this needs to, if we're going to do a reading guide, it's got to be an individual led guide. And so we couldn't agree on that. And then kind of said that probably it doesn't need one. And so pulled that piece out of it. But I tell you, it's very interesting because I wanted to put everything I had been saying, you know, I've got editors who work with me along the way and I'm sending stuff. And my editor's like, she literally said to me, you can write more than one book because I was trying to put it all in one. And she said, you know, let's simplify. Let's get traction on this. So I have no doubt that I know I've got at least another couple of books in me. So just with what I do with this work.
So
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say my husband, Billy, and I, he has his doctorate in educational leadership and his doctoral treatise. It's called a treatise and not a dissertation when you do it for education. And his doctoral treatise was on Enneagram and education. So, and he and I jointly in COVID, I think, started kind of building a curriculum for Enneagram and marriage and parenting that we have traveled together to do. So I've got at least a couple more for corporate. There's going to be, one in education. I think there's a great one on parenting that he and I can co-write. So there's a lot of options for this, for sure.
That's awesome. When it comes time to write that next book, do you go with that same publisher? Or is it, hey, here's publisher A, B, C, and D. Here's what I got. Here's what I did.
I think, honestly, Ryan, it depends. It depends on their comfort level with what I'm, you know, none of what I'm writing will have a spiritual slant. So to have a Christian publisher at some point, that might be an issue. It hasn't been so far. It's something I say it marries very well with a spiritual journey. That's just not the angle I'm taking on it. But I know of plenty of authors who have used different publishers. So I think it just depends on, you know, what the book is, the target audience for the book, and if it aligns with the publisher's desires as well, probably.
So we've talked about Enneagram, or you have, we haven't. Walk us through broadly the strokes of the numbers. What kind of the highlights of the personalities they maybe fit within, or maybe there's a person that, you know, like this person's this number. You talked about Jordan being an eight. So
yeah.
And you're an eight. So talk us through that a little bit.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you first, I'm going to delineate between doing thinking and feeling, those three centers of intelligence, because I got to say that I think part of the reason my work is going to be so impactful, people mistype all the time. There are so many Enneagram tests out there that say, you know, pay us this much money and get your type. And the type is literally incorrect half the time. In my 17 years of consulting, it's been a flip of the coin. And that's not the test's fault. It's human. It's the human's fault, if you're going to say it that way. You know, the point is when you're answering questions, you know, depending on your stress level, depending on all kinds of things, you answer questions, maybe not how you really are, but how you see yourself or how you'd like to be, that sort of thing. And I think a big reason that people tend to mistype in Enneagram specifically is they confuse thinking and feeling. So the way I say it is doing is universal. No matter who we are, no matter what Enneagram type, we all have this direct connection to doing. It's action and implementation, and people don't confuse that. Feeling, yes, that represents emotion, but feeling also represents the human-centric center, the people-centric center of intelligence. And so that's where our EQ and our ability to relate to others and get along with others comes from. And then feeling also represents our personal lens, our subjective view of the world. So I'm always telling people that just because you're mentally working through something doesn't mean you're drawing from the actual thinking center. So much of our mental energy and our thoughts are fueled by our subjective lens. And so that's all still categorized as feeling, leaving the thinking center strictly for logic and objective reason. And there isn't a direct tie to, you know, the ancient philosophers, but if you look at Plato's tripartite soul, he wrote about in the Republic. I mean, he talks about thinking, feeling, and doing, the hierarchy. Doing's on the bottom. That's the largest portion of everyone. Feelings on top of that, the apex of the pyramid is thinking, because as human beings, that's what separates us from other creatures, is our ability to reason logically. But man, people think they're thinking when they are just feeling all the time. And I get that in corporate all the time. Yeah.
When you work with a corporate client, be it Chick-fil-A or whomever it is, what's that look like? Is it more of a workshop? Or is it all year long? You have different scenarios or et cetera. What does that look like when you're working with a corporate client?
It depends on their needs and their buy-in. I think it's a testament to how impactful this can be, because 70% of my clients are long-term. What I tell all clients is, you can't just have me come in once. If you really want to put this into practice, you know, there's got to be some repetition. So I say anywhere from 2 to 4 times a year is ideal. But I've had clients who, one of my main clients brought me in monthly for 3 years, and I was there once a month working with different teams. So I go in, Ryan, and the first and most important piece is getting everyone typed correctly. That's where I started discovering that 1/3 of people mistype. Even if they pick it up and just read something, they're like, this is me. And what's fascinating is, not to get too in the weeds, but so we have a dominant center that we start with, but we process with a different center. And the three types that process with doing are 8s, my type, 1s, they're known as the perfectionist, and 3s, they're called the performer. And 8s, 1s, and 3s, I just had someone talk about how 8s and 1s are workhorses and 3s are show ponies. Once you know, 3s are all about image. They're really good at kind of connecting to everyone. They're called chameleons. But all 3 of us process with action. Now, everyone's doing at work, but 8s, 1s, and 3s, I call the motors. So when I'm in a more like blue collar environment, I deal with so many people mistyping as 8s, 1s, and 3s because they're like, I'm doing at work, so I've got to be one of these 3. Well, we're all doing at work. There's a difference in kind of how that shakes out based on your actual type. And the truth is, there are actually fewer 8s and fewer 4s than any other type. And I don't work with many people who mistype as 4s. 4s are really complex. That's my older son. They're processing with feeling and they're dealing with fluctuating emotions. I work with have worked with multiple of every single type who mistypes as 8. Like, we're called the boss or the challenger, and people are like, yeah, I'm angry, I like to argue. Well, that's not an 8. I actually don't like to argue because I don't need you to agree with me. So if someone's arguing with you, they're likely a contrarian 5 or 6. They're not an 8, but people assume that if someone's arguing with you, they're an 8. That's the last thing. Like, I don't care what you think. I'm going to move on. I'm going to say my say and move on. It's a waste of energy for me to argue. So it depends on the needs of the company ultimately. But ideally, I go in, make sure everyone's typed correctly, and then I offer 9 different team-centered workshops. So that's a big part of my, based on different elements, how we act in stress, how we process, all kinds of things, our focus shifts. And then a huge and growing part of my business is just executive coaching, one-to-one coaching. So I'm either doing it there in person with managers, or I'm doing it through Zoom. That's, again, a growing part of my business. And now I'm having companies, I will have one-to-one sessions, if it's a smaller team, with everyone on the team, so that when I'm there in person with them, we're spending that time on a team-centric workshop.
Do you find, I know you talked about this and you hinted about this, that people are mistyped. Do you find when you're figuring out the type of a person that they sometimes answer a question based on what is perceived that they need to be in their current role? And if so, how often does that happen?
It happens all the time, Ryan. It happens all the time. So I work with a woman who checked all the boxes of 8, even with me. one of the gifts I bring to this is I've known it for so long and I'm intuitive. So I know if you're mistyped, I know before you know, essentially. I've had to work on my delivery and coaching of that to get you to your right type, right? But if you're in stress, when you look at an Enneagram, it's a nine, Ennea means nine in Greek. It's a nine-pointed symbol. And every type is connected with lines to two other types. Well, those lines matter. And the most important line is the arrow moving toward your type. And when people type, the two types that should jump out at them the most are their core type and their stress type. We're under stress so much of the time. And what's cool about this system is it's all motivational. It's not behavioral. It's what's behind and your behavior. And we need the number at the end of our stress line. We need the behaviors of that number to take care of us ultimately. And so a lot of times I find people typing, if work is particularly stressful, they're going to type in their stress move than in their core type. What I'm good at is walking them back to the core type. Because if you're trying to figure out yourself, and the whole point of the Enneagram is we've got three centers of intelligence to draw from, but we don't draw from them in any kind of balance. And what's most prevalent, and it's the first teamwork I do after people know their type, is stance work. And we're in stances based on the center of intelligence used least or last. So that's what we're not bringing to the table, right? So you've got eights, threes, and sevens who are in historically what's called the aggressive stance, but it's not about behavior, it's about motivation. And these three, I'm one of them, are the aggressive types. So we live life in the easiest, in the illusion of control, ultimately. And the way I do this work, I say that it's about our reference point. And feeling is last for three, sevens, and eights. So it doesn't mean we don't feel, but we're not bringing it to work, which means in our big picture, self-confident thinking, we're not looking at the toll it's going to take on people. We're just so out there, big picture, let's move fast, let's think fast. We got to learn to slow down and bring feeling up, which really just means bring people awareness up. Ones, twos, and sixes, guys, this is half the world. Literally, it's half of every single company that I work with are ones, twos, and sixes. They're historically called the dependent stance. I have yet to meet a one, two, or six who likes that, but it doesn't mean they're dependent on other people. What they have that they didn't choose and they can't change is they have an external reference point. So ones, twos, and sixes are tethered to their environment. And what I say about threes, sevens, and eights, when I say we're independent, I say the world could be blowing up next to me and sevens and threes. We can choose to do something about it if we want, but we can just as easily stand right in the middle of the explosion and be unaffected by it. That's our superpower that ends up being our kryptonite. Ones, twos, and sixes have an external reference point. If the world's blowing up next to them, they are anxiously doing something to improve what they see. And they feel strongly about doing. So what's happening is they're using doing and feeling in tandem because they're responding to what's outside of them. They feel strongly about doing something about it. Thinking is last. Logic is last. And where do we get personal boundaries? From logic. So ones, twos, and sixes, it has nothing to do with intellectual capacity. They just don't have great personal boundaries. So in working environments, they're taking on more than what is theirs to do. They feel strongly about it. They're have an external reference point, so they're watching everybody else who's not taking on what's theirs to do. And that's where issues come up ultimately at work, right? And then you got fours, fives, and nines. I married a nine, and doing is last for them. It has nothing to do with not doing. My nine husband is in our college's Hall of Fame for baseball. He's got his doctorate. What doing last means is those three types do what they like and what they want in the order that they like and that they want and on a timeline of their choosing. And any outside pressure to doing, they have an intuitive, stubborn response to. It's hardwired into them. Well, that's every job on the planet is outside pressure to your doing. So when you just know that much, right, then there's a lot you can do to make work better for everyone, make the work environment better. Because what I say is I think with very few exceptions, we don't set out to frustrate each other. We spend a lot of our waking hours at work. And if you just apply the Enneagram, it's going to make work a whole lot better because it's not personal. It's just how you're wired. It's the Enneagram, right?
You mentioned EQ earlier and your husband working on his doctorate. My wife did her doctoral stuff and whatever it was. She did an EDD as well. So it wasn't a dissertation like whatever you mentioned.
Yeah, it was a treatise.
It's just not my thing. That's her thing. I graduated and they said, don't come back. And I said, don't worry.
Don't worry.
We're good. Like I'm done. So I've read a lot on Goleman and Bradbury. So what are your thoughts on EQ and how it relates to what you do?
Man, it relates a ton because it's something I've had to develop in myself, is EQ. I say no matter what building I was in, no matter what profession I was in, whether it was investments or education, every single one of my professional reviews sounded the same. Joey, you're killing it. We literally couldn't do what we do without you. And you need to stop making people cry. And so
that's funny.
We could go back 30 years.
We could go back 30. We could just jump right back. Right. Right.
That made me giggle. So thank you for that. That brought me back to my teenage years. So thank you.
So it matters. And the thing with me uniquely, the thing with H uniquely is we're direct, blunt, and firm. And that's what, you know, for all of us, we ascribe to the world the way we see the world. So we want from you what we, you know, what we're giving. And I literally, Wes knows better than anyone. I don't want you to sugarcoat or beat around the bush. I want you to tell me it like it is, exactly like it is. So that's what I was offering to the world. And I called my mom. I was still in investments, I think. I called her in my early 20s and I was like, I got a real problem. The golden rule is not working for me. I'm treating people exactly like I want to be treated. And this is just not going well. So I'm uniquely equipped because most people are bringing feeling and some kind of EQ to work. There are very few types that aren't bringing it. I say my type eights and fives are the only two types who don't bring any combination of EQ or responsiveness to work. Like we have it in us. We just have to, we didn't come to work to make friends. We're task focused. That's the thing. So Wes, it ends up being very important. And I think where I'm uniquely equipped to get a more logical, lower EQ person to see the value of it is just to use my own personal experience. Because it's like, they know where I'm coming from. I get it. But most people are bringing some. And it matters. The way we engage people really, really matters in any environment. But I think especially work environments.
This has been very interesting, but also just kind of confirming to, like, we're having this conversation, it feels like we're back in Leonard and we're 15, 16 years old. Like, you're saying things and using words to describe everything that went on when we were younger, and it didn't make sense back then, but now it makes lots of sense.
Yeah. And that's my favorite thing that people say is, this makes so much sense. And when you listen to this intro, no matter what environment you're in, you can't help but see yourself, see your parents, see your spouse, see your kids, like, because it hits the nail on the head for all of them. And what I've always said about, I'm not going to tell you your number on air because I'm not going to tell you your number. You got to come to that on your own and I'll help you get there. I will say, Wes, that what I say about my nine husband, Billy, who definitely has a higher EQ than I do. With nines, everybody likes nines. Like, they get along with everybody. They're the salt of the earth person. They just don't ruffle anyone's feathers. And so I've said for a long time that Billy explains me to people in a relatable way. And once we figure out your type, Wes, what I am very aware of is you went behind me a lot in those high school years and you explained me to people in a relatable way. And I know you did. You didn't have to tell me. You weren't offended by my anger and you explained me to people ultimately.
You is to know you is to love you. Like, that's, so it's one of those deals, like, you never offended me because I knew you never were doing anything in any form or fashion that was mean-spirited.
Correct.
You're just throwing it out there. And if you didn't like it, that was a you problem. Not a you problem. And so it was one of those deals, like, you never really bothered me, but you probably came off to some people as very, very brash and very, like, abrasive, even though your heart was in the right place. I mean, like I said, you never bothered me. I always, you made me giggle and you made me laugh. And I like to be around people who make me laugh, even if it's at their expense. So
you're saying in your language, what I've always said, if you just look at my HR files on me, essentially, people go, I wouldn't go to HR if it wouldn't occur to me to go to HR. If I have an issue, I'm going to handle it with you. It literally wouldn't occur to me to go to HR. One of my clients, guys, is an eight. He has built a multi-million dollar company that is in a lot of states. They have no HR department. I'm like, only an eight. I said, who handles like your payroll and benefits? He was like, well, it's all in finance. I mean, there is no HR department and only an eight, I think, would do that. But what I've said always is I say what I have to say and others say, Joey personally attacked me. And I go to logic and I say, I know I didn't mean to hurt you. I told you to do better, basically. I didn't call you fat, ugly, lazy, stupid, dumb, any of them. But it's my delivery, Billy says all the time. It's It's my delivery. I lose people in my delivery. So
I've been told that as well in email and verbal.
Yeah. But yeah.
Because yeah. And the thing that drives me nuts is if I ask a question to my CSR or anybody in an email and they don't answer it, or they ask me the same question that I've answered 14 times, or they ask me what they should do, and I'm like, well, have we done this yet? It's just, it gets to the point sometimes where I'm just a smartass. And it probably comes across like that. I get it. My wife tells me that all the time. Oddly enough, I married a Beth as well. Wes is named Beth, so isn't
okay, two Beths. Ryan, I could tell, I would bet my house just so far what you said, that you're probably a 5, which is that other type that's not 8. I don't see the 8 edge on you, the intensity on you. You'd rather kind of make a joke about it. But if you're a 5, here's what I say, Wes, about 5s. 5s have thinking. I have doing supported by thinking. 5s have thinking supported by more thinking. So if you disagree with a 5, they're not going to take it personally. They're going to think you're an idiot. And that's a 5's favorite word is idiot.
So true.
And you and I share a line. So I get that. Your secure line is 8. My stress line is 5. So that, dude, I totally get, like, I can pick out 5s like that. What makes that helpful in what I do is 5s generally think, because of all the logic, any system that's going to categorize 8 billion people is bullshit. And so.
Because Colby, we've gone through Colby before. I think it's dumb. I don't understand why people utilize this in the insurance world to hire people. Either they're good or not. You just work with them.
Right.
I mean,
I get it, man.
Test it out. I don't get it.
I had a 5 tell me, and this is probably the highest compliment I could be paid. He was like, this is a cheat code. Because 5s are called the observer. You step back and you watch people that you don't understand because they're using so much feeling that you're like void in. Ryan, this is not going to surprise you. You don't have, when you look at the Enneagram and how it layers on the centers of intelligence, 5s and 7s don't have a line to the feeling center. It's very double true. Logic and doing.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do not feel, Wire says it all the time. You do not feel empathy. And I just don't.
Yeah. I mean, but you're the most neutral number. You're never going to let your emotions sweep you away, which is nice. What I say about 5s is the non-negotiable, and we can kick this into just the non-negotiable for every type because, you know, there's so much I could say. I like to focus on the non-negotiable. So Ryan, see if this checks. The non-negotiable for 5s who are motivated to perceive, like that's the motivating need, is just to understand a world that you do not understand because so many people are operating with feeling. Okay. And being swept away by their emotions and not being objective. The non-negotiable is your social battery, man. You've got an acute social battery. And so when I say with 5s, no matter where I am in the country working with 5s, if people are going to be involved, that's what drains from your finite store of energy is being around others, even when you want to be. And so no matter where I am, if people are going to be involved, so whether it's a work meeting or a social function, it's what time does this begin? What time does it end? And who's going to be there? Because what 5s do, no matter what, whether it's work or home, is you're mentally compartmentalizing how much energy you have left versus who do you have to be around. And if that person's more talkative or more emotional, they drain from you so much faster than other types. Yeah.
So based on various emotional degrees, did you?
Exactly.
I have no clue what I am, but I'm going to be the one that drains people's batteries.
Yeah.
Wes, I've thought for a long time, we got to make sure, I mean, I'll tell you, it's interesting because you need to know for yourself. Ironically, I think you might be a 2. I've always thought that, a 2. So that's my mom. You're the male version. And what's interesting is you and I go against the gender stereotype. So I'm supposed to look like the 2, as a female, you know, I'm supposed to not have a high EQ. I think you do. I think you got a huge heart. What's interesting though, is that means I share a line with each of you. If you end up being a 2, 2s, let me tell you the non-negotiable. We'll see if this hits for you and for Ryan. 2s are motivated to be needed. They're connectors. They're really good at bringing out the best in others and supporting others. And the non-negotiable for 2s is they feel what you're feeling before they ever feel their own feelings. So they're accurately seen as empaths. They don't have good personal boundaries because you're wearing yourself out for everyone else. Best friend you'll ever have. They remember all the important little things. They catch all the nuances. But if you ask Wes, hey man, what are you feeling? What do you need? How can I help you? Wes has no idea. Yeah, he has no idea. because he's literally not wired to know that for himself. He's wired to know that for you. And for both of you, doing's not first. It's first for me, but you're connected to eight. So our doing collectively is the same. It's independent doing. Get out of our way. When the three of us are doing uniquely, we are the three independent doers and we know exactly what to do. You can influence it. We'll be transparent with it.
Very true.
It's a,
People ask me, what do you need? I'm good, man. What do you need?
I'm
like,
good.
Let me take care of you. Like, I like to take care of people. Like, that is my love language.
Yeah.
Make sure people are taken care of and finding ways to serve them. Like, I feel like I'm called to serve others first before myself. That's kind of my thing. So
I know.
I love it.
I knew that from a young age.
You should have told me so I would have quit chasing my tail. I'd known more. Really, probably could have been better at what I'm currently doing if I'd known that.
No,
I think,
man,
I ended up here anyway. I don't think there was anywhere else I was going to end up than doing what I'm currently doing. I didn't know insurance was a real job, but here we are.
Well, it's a connector job. It's an EQ job. If you think about it, it's a people job. So you're literally built for it.
I couldn't be a coach. Couldn't
in all
do
good
it.
Ways. No.
Well,
you can't separate emotion. You're processing with emotion and you can't separate from it. So, yeah.
No, I get made fun of. So when I coach, it's a struggle. I got technical foul in a first grade basketball game. So apparently you're not supposed to yell at an official because they have feelings.
It was the same thing. I have similar stories.
So what?
I would get coaching tennis in high school, coaching high school tennis. I would stop in the middle of the match. I'd be like, why do I care this much? This is not okay. This is not natural. I'm not even out there.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
you know, going back to our Leonard days, there's the guy that's the superintendent of Leonard High School and Leonard ISD is a guy by the name of Brad Maxwell. And I don't know if you remember Brett or not, but he was the tennis coach my sophomore, junior year of high school. I guess he was maybe the freshman year too. So, because I played with my cousin and he got mad at me my junior year. You were gone. You'd already left Leonard at this point. He got mad at me because we were losing and I just lost my temper and just a ball came over. It was just, all I needed to do was dink it and it would have been an easy win. And I just reared back and hit the ball over the school, like just hit it as hard as I could and lost a point. And I slammed my racket down and broke it. And he walked over and he goes, what's wrong with you? I was like, this is stupid. I hate losing. I don't know why we're doing this. Like, I just done. I'm done. Like, I'd rather get in a fight right now than do this. And he's just like, okay, we're done. I was like, okay, good. I'm going home now. That's it.
And that, my dear, is your stress move. You're eight, me. I'm your stress move. It's the fastest move on the Enneagram. I worked with a hospital administrator who was a two and her staff said her head would spin. Because that move to eight is very, very fast. Ryan takes longer to warm up to that. Like Ryan, if you continue to be an idiot, Ryan will stay neutral until he can't anymore. And while Ryan disconnects from pretty much all emotion, anger's the one that'll crop up for him. But he's much more long-suffering before it happens. But both of y'all can blame that on me. That's your move to eight for both of you. That's just where I start out.
That's funny. So what's next for you? Now you got this book, it's in the can, it's getting ready to be published and pushed out. What's next?
Hey, man, already the traction that this book has kicked up without being out yet. I think the sky's the limit, obviously. And I try to keep my egregious self-confidence in check. I've said that twice now, so let me give the background for that. I was with my mom one time, she was teaching, and I was in the room and she was searching if she was teaching for a descriptor for the self-confidence of eights, which is unique. And someone in the room, not an eight, offered egregious. And you hear that and you think you know what egregious means. And then you look it up and it means harmful and offensive. And I was like, wait a minute. How can self-confidence be harmful and offensive? But you grew up with me, man. Eight confidence is for the way I take up space offends people. And so I'm trying to keep that self-confidence in check, but I really think this is going to be a big deal. I think it's going to help a lot of people and just open up some large scale problem solving, which is what I'm built to do. So I hope it means I just have access to more and more companies who could use this. Like, I love this offer that I have to talk to city leaders in Nashville. I would love that. I think this is going to work everywhere. I have found a way to practically and efficiently so that it shouldn't take more than an hour, you know, to kind of figure out your type or whatever. And I've put all that in the book. So you should be able to read that book, know your type. But then the whole second half of the book is I anchored every chapter on every number with seven descriptors of how that type views themselves right next to how other people view that same type. So, and then I spend the chapter explaining it's really what's on the left. Our perceptions just get us into trouble. And I think this is going to solve a ton of problems. So sky's the limit, really.
That's good stuff.
You can say you knew me when.
I have known you now for 30 something years.
Yeah.
And you're saying things and you're describing situations, and I can understand it. Like I said, understand it better. I can understand where the, some of those decision-making and some of those words came from. And again, for me, you were never someone that was mean-spirited. There was
no,
you were never someone.
You knew me.
You were never someone that was coming to do anything harmful. You just told me what I needed to hear, how I needed to hear. I'm like, oh, okay, this makes total sense. Like to me, it was like, oh yeah, I'm glad you said it the way you said it. Like, and so we never. I don't feel like in the time
we never you and I
never had a cross word. We probably were. I mean, we were probably more agreeable than most anybody else around, just because of I guess how our personalities fit. Now, understanding it.
Yeah.
Our personality.
Share a line.
Yeah. They meshed well.
I say if you share a line, the people, because every type is shares line with two other numbers, then if you share a line with someone, there's just an unspoken understanding that's just hardwired in. And so what you saw in me was that empathic heart. Yeah. Like you're at the end of the day, you're a responsive feeler. You feel what people feel. That empath is real. Well, the way I'm advancing the Enneagram, I only believe that true empathy is only there in the numbers connected to two. And so that's me as an eight, and that's my son Will as a four. I think the only true empaths are those three numbers. Everyone else can have sympathy, but I think when you share that line and you know that, you knew I had real empathy. You had to be in my small, tiny inner circle to see it, ultimately.
There was, like I said, I always thought it was worked well with who we were.
Yeah.
I could see why people now, like as you're explaining all this, how people could see you as more, I guess, just kind of just blunt. I mean, to put it in a short version there. I always thought it was kind of funny. It's like, I don't see that. Like, I didn't understand it at the time. I was just thought people were, you know, as a teenager, you think people are jealous or people moments or they're trying to put you down. But now as an adult, you didn't have the education or the real world experience to kind of see, you know, we live in a lens that was pretty covered. And as you live life, the lens gets removed and you see more of the world and you're able to understand more of how people act and react.
And I was very unapologetic about it, right? Because logically, I know that I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. So that's on you, right? Well, I say three, sevens, and eights, the independent types. I don't believe true transformation is going to happen for us where we're going to really reach balance until we come up against something we can't control. And getting fired, I could control that. I got a lawyer, filed wrongful termination, never had to go to court, got everything I asked for. The thing I couldn't control was my son being expelled. And I shifted in such an important way because that was something I could not control. And it makes me better at what I do now. And I get that I can't just say that's on you because that's such a large group of the world who I'm offending by the way I take up space. I got to have some understanding for that. So this is a manual to help us understand each other, all types ultimately. So
okay, repeat the title of the book so everybody will hear it.
When Working Together Doesn't Work.
I expect my copy to be signed.
Well, of course, personally.
Yeah, yeah. And I almost wish you would like personally deliver it. Like that almost seems like it's non-negotiable at this point. Or maybe I'd be to drive to Dallas one weekend and just pick it up.
Or maybe you just get your company to hire me and then you look like the rock star and I bring you 10 signed books.
So all 50 people at work here, huh?
Hey.
We know what we do is as we're sitting here talking, we're part of an association that does an annual conference. And this would be something that...
Dude, it would kill.
It would be perfect if you and me were both still involved in it.
Well, we know the right people. Let's just put it that way. We know the right people to talk to. One of our good buddies who's on, we hang out with way too much. He is well connected in this space. And so we'll make sure we get this done.
And y'all can tell from listening to me, this is entertaining, right? Like it's going to be entertaining no matter who.
This brings me back to being a 15-year-old boy.
Yeah.
I always thought was would be neat is to have a discussion like this for our podcast at the conference because it's something different. You know, you can go through kind of like when people do panel discussions, which I think is boring. It's not, but it's kind of, you have the questions, we have this discussion, you know, how can it help us as agents or our agencies or set or even the companies, the carriers. I mean, there's multiple carriers that are represented there.
Man, but I've had insurance firms. It's a thing. They use me because if you just employ this a little bit to where it's part of your lingo. You can read your client and you can approach them from there. You can read what they're looking for. You can approach it from there. It's helpful for sure.
It definitely is helpful for us as the agent to be able to read what the customer wants.
Exactly.
How they want to be supported. You know, what's their hot bar? Do they have a personality? Do they not? Are they more of a CPA, CFO? Just give me the numbers.
Yep.
Or do they want to chat?
Yep.
Understanding for sure.
I like this a lot more better than Colby stuff.
Well, there's nothing to push against. It's not going to contradict any other system out there because this is the only one that types you on your hard wiring, essentially. So I think can withstand more than other systems can.
Good deal.
That makes sense.
Well, this brings us to the, yeah.
What?
Where can we find you?
You can find me at wesolutions.life. Wesolutions.com was taken, but wesolutions, we stands for working Enneagram. So wesolutions.life, and then the book's right there at the front anyway. I'm on LinkedIn, Joey Shuey. So, and if you're, I have a couple of Instagram handles. Most of the work I've done with this, well, all right now, is going through Enneagram Parents. So that's the, on Instagram, where Billy and I, we've got 17,000 followers, I guess, at this point. So Enneagram Parents is a good way if you just want to dip your toe in. What I tell people is I'm not going to give you memes. I'm not going to tell you. Like, I just want to shoot myself when I hear and see, like, your Enneagram coffee order or, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just such a horrible way to dilute such an important wisdom, I think. But what I tell people about Enneagram Parents is you're just going to get bite-sized logical chunks of Enneagram wisdom for marriage, parenting, and just generally working relationships.
So what's next for you from here? More books,
more
talks? More
books, spreading out. Sargento's one of my clients. I'm going to be there again in February. I work with their legal and compliance team. But most of my clients are in the South. So spreading out, I think, in the U.S. first more. And one of the reasons I went with this publisher is they have sister publishing houses in all kinds of in different countries. And so I think as this expands, I think this is going to be big in other countries as well. So it's already there. Enneagram's already there. People just aren't doing much with corporate and Enneagram.
Do you have to go on a media tour, if you will, with the book?
Like a book signing tour? I think, yeah, there will be some level of that for sure. I'm a little bit different because I already have, you know, people who usually do this kind of thing, they're going and speaking at conferences and that sort of thing. I go into companies. And so my book tour is going to look a little bit different. Like, I already have clients who want me to come, you know, they want to celebrate. They've been with me for 5 years and they want to celebrate the book, and I'll be just in their company and in their communities. So it'll look a little different, I think, than a typical book signing, which I actually like, right?
Then hanging out at Barnes & Noble for 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say no to Barnes & Noble either, though. I'm definitely going to be geeked when I walk into a bookstore and I see my book on a shelf. That's going to be cool.
That will be neat.
Yeah.
Well, this concludes our podcast with you. We thank you so much for being with us. It's always a joy to speak from someone from my part of the world who understands that Texas is better than Oklahoma in all things and all ways.
Let's hold tight. Time out. Oklahoma is still on top of Texas. It's just geographic.
If we have to hold you up, because if not, you would be worthless.
Or why, you know, Ryan, you've heard, I'm sure, why Texas hasn't fallen into the Gulf of, I'm going to still call it Mexico, Gulf of Mexico. You know why?
Why is that?
Because Oklahoma sucks.
Yes, he just made Wes's day.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Listen, that Texas.
That's Saturday.
Man, most of your listeners are probably from Oklahoma. I should not. I mean, could you cut that out? It's just a joke.
No. They know who I am. At this point, you're already associated with me. You're already tainted because you're associated with me. So, listen, that just cemented the fact that.
All right.
Yeah, it's fine. You're fine. There we go. I'll tell them it's my fault. Don't worry about it. Don't hold personal. So.
You teed me up.
Yeah, I did. It's all my fault. That's what I did. I got you in trouble all the time.
Yeah, that's so true.
Unapologetically Texan.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
That's who I am. I'm never gonna apologize for being great.
And you should not.
That's right. Yeah. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And you'll find this wherever you can find your podcast. Until next time, have a great day.